Since the lights were already dimmed, I didn't get a chance to tell you how really happy I am to be here. It's very exciting to see faces that are new to me and faces that are very, very familiar, and to see all the signs of caring and sharing and solidarity in this community. I love your musicians. I think your worship committee does a lot of wonderful work. I have nothing but fond memories of my years with Beacon. And I think there have been various regatherings since I was minister here. I think I've known Ev more than half of my life. So, yeah, it's a lot of deep connections with Beacon that I feel. It was an honor to be asked by your worship committee to talk about justice. I'm glad they somehow thought of me when they were thinking of having a program on justice. I think justice is a very complex and a deep theme, so I'm only going to touch on a few aspects of it. Probably most of us associate justice with liberty and equal equality and a measure of prosperity for all. We might think of justice as a lot of groups in many places engaging in consultative decision-making. Watching your play here, I couldn't help but remember that consultation, as I'm going to describe it, is a very important part of Beacon life in particular and Unitarian Universalism in general. So my thesis in a nutshell is that justice is a process of consultation that every one of us can contribute to. It's something we can make ourselves. It's not something we have to wait for others to provide. From this point of view, justice is universal participation, requiring and developing our moral spiritual capacities. I think of justice as a transformation of some kind, both inner and outer, and involving humanity in ever larger circles and gradually leading to a peaceful and more prosperous world. So I'd like us to look more at the making of justice than actually at justice itself. It's a social condition that requires respectful and mature consultation in ever wider circles. This word consultation, when I first heard about it as a kind of moral spiritual exercise, I was thinking of it as something that professionals do mostly, that it's something that costs money. You have to leave consultation to the financial experts, the engineers, the scientists, the political advisors. But if we step back and ask if there's a generic method for making improvements on almost any kind of problem, or getting closer to the truth on any kind of a question, or taking steps forward in the face of significant or challenging issues at all levels in the world, we're led to the threshold of this process called consultation, an interactive and disciplined approach to problems, questions, and issues, no matter how difficult and complex. The first book I read on the Baha'i Faith was called Consultation, A Universal Lamp of Guidance. And I was shocked with this title. How can consultation, assuming it meant what I thought it meant, be a universal lamp of guidance? Here are some quotes from that book. Consultation is one of the greatest bounties given to humanity. It is an art, a key which can unlock the mysteries of life and open the door to answers to the most perplexing questions. Questions of intimate and personal concern, or questions of worldwide significance. It's a major tool for the coming of age of the human race, a fundamental element in bringing into being a new world civilization. So from this perspective, consultation is something very, very powerful, but very, very difficult, and requires a sustained effort in ever larger circles. But its fruits will multiply in proportion to the number of participants it engages. Baha'is, for one, are encouraged to use consultation for personal issues, family development, other relationships, including occupational and professional challenges, as well as local, regional, national, and global challenges. Some more quotes. The principle of consultation is one of the most fundamental elements of the divine edifice. take counsel together and let your concern be only for that which betters the condition of humanity. Consultation bestows greater awareness and transmutes conjecture into certitude. It is a shining light which, in a dark world, leads the way and guides. As I've experienced consultation in the Baha'i and the multicultural and multi-faith context, I see it as having kind of 10 steps or 10 processes. And Marilyn was kind enough to indulge me, and those 10 steps are sitting there in your order of service in case you want to look at them. We squeeze them in. And I just want to go through those 10 and comment briefly on them. The first one is calling upon divine assistance. I'm very well aware that this word divine gets in the way for a lot of people, and there's lots of ways around that. I think what this step is saying is we need to reflect. We need to be meditative. We need to adopt a spiritual posture of humility, of learning. I can imagine a humanistic investigator saying silently before they begin a difficult task, "I submit to higher truth from whatever source it may come, wherever it may lead in my larger search." Something like that. That kind of a beginning seems to be essential to this whole process of consultation. And I can imagine Galileo, Newton, Darwin, Einstein, and Hawking all saying something like that in their heart, in their mind, before they did their groundbreaking work and before they came face to face with the vast and mysterious unknown. I believe that without some kind of a step like this, this first step, consultation is in danger of being morally and spiritually shallow. By shallow, I mean unable to bring about personal and social transformation. So this would be the first step, and I won't say as much about all these steps as this one. And secondly, clarifying or defining the issue to be addressed. That's utterly reasonable and logical and scientific. Third, establish the relevant knowledge on the matter. That means talk to experts or do the homework, investigate the matter. Fourth, identifying what moral and spiritual principles and guidance might apply. This would be something very comfortable to Unitarian Universalists, looking for the principles of justice, responsibility, wisdom, compassion, etc., wisdom from the world's religions. The fifth step there, they're not numbered, but the one in the middle is conducting a full, frank, and courteous discussion in which participants remain detached from their own opinions. That is the heart of consultation, getting ready to do that and doing that. And imagine a conversation that is both frank and courteous. So people are to speak the truth, but also be respectful and to listen and be detached from what decisions are made, almost as if everything you say goes out and belongs to the group and you no longer hold on to it once it's shared. The sixth step is considering alternate solutions. This means brainstorming, but tuning into perhaps questions of feasibility and possibility, and is this the right time? The seventh, deciding on a specific course of action by consensus if possible, and by voting if necessary. This would be an act of commitment after conscientious deliberation. Then eight, implementing the decisions agreed upon, each taking responsibility, putting plans in motion. Ninth, this is another challenging one, abiding by the decisions faithfully and cooperatively, even if you didn't agree with the decision. And this requires a moral, spiritual step, and it requires a covenantal kind of attitude. And the tenth one, revisit the issue if and when it arises anew, giving the decision a chance to be experimented with fairly and justly. So those are 10 steps, and of course most groups don't take all of them, and I can't say I have taken all these steps in great depth on any issue. So in other words, consultation is a goal, a vision, something we see in the distance, as in this play. And but humanity has to learn how to do that. I happen to believe that science is pretty much the same process. Science is very effective. Science solves problems. So moral and spiritual light can be added to this process that makes it even more powerful. So imagine the world using this method of consultation to address its issues in families, communities, cities, regions, nations, continents, and the world as a whole. If we did so, we would be moving toward justice. I have found that in my 14 years of Baha'i consultation, I've been very stretched, very, very stretched. We're supposed to be detached, and we're not supposed to take things as personal affronts. But whenever it's like an issue comes up that I fancy myself knowledgeable in, I can take affront if people don't agree with me. And I think everybody has their areas like this. So that's why it's difficult. To do consultation, we have to shave off our rough edges. We have to clip our wings. We have to have people rain on our parade, or any other metaphor you want to use for the process of shrinking the ego, hurting the pride. So consultation is difficult, very challenging, and very powerful when it's done well, and we can learn to do it better. I want to share an example. In 1990, I was minister, one of the ministers of the church at that time, and there was a process of consultation. The question was, should Beacon establish a consensus of core beliefs or welcome a diverse range of beliefs? That question had come up before in Beacon's past, and now it was coming up again. And I helped facilitate a process involving some study groups that looked at this beforehand. It sounds like you're going through that again. I gather from the play, reading between the lines, a similar process may be going on again. Should Beacon establish a consensus of core beliefs or welcome a diverse range of beliefs? That was sort of the question we were consulting on. The study groups led to a kind of gathering at Sasamat. There was a talking stick. I remember maybe 50, 60 people participating in it, everyone sharing, speaking the truth as they understood it. And this was a very painful process and revelatory. I think the decision was something like diversity is valued more than consensus. A developmental threshold was passed through that process. At least this is how I remember the story, looking back almost a quarter of a century. Here's a possible future Beacon consultation, and who am I to suggest this? I'm just a visitor, maybe presumptuous. But questions like this, Unitarians are always open to new ideas. A question like this could be consulted on. What are some of the most significant contributions to justice Beacon could make to New Westminster or Coquitlam? What are the most significant contributions? Which of these possible initiatives seems most timely? How shall we implement such an initiative? This could be, in other words, I'm trying to guess what might come up from such a discussion. There could be an idea to use Beacon's musical and dramatic talent to somehow benefit the area and raise a justice issue. Something related to prejudice reduction, or religiously speaking, or ethnically related, or gender related. There could be an issue of homelessness or poverty that was focused on. Something about environmental responsibility. Maybe a project of civic education or public consultation. In any case, if Beacon did something like this, and I think it has done things like this in the past, that would be yet another contribution to local justice. Individuals and groups grow in their skill level and effectiveness with ongoing consultation, I believe. More quotes, if you are aware of a certain truth, if you possess a jewel, share it with others in a language of utmost kindliness and goodwill. A kindly tongue is the lodestone of the hearts of all people. It is the bread of the spirit. It clothes the words with meaning. It is the fountain of light of wisdom. It is the fountain of the light of wisdom and understanding. Search out the truth and do not insist upon your own opinion. For stubbornness and persistence in one's views lead ultimately to discord and wrangling, and the truth will remain hidden. I want to shift our focus briefly, and I know I only have a certain amount of time. I want to talk about justice from the global perspective for a bit. A great landmark in the world's quest for equality of rights before the law was, of course, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. In 1948, Eleanor Roosevelt led the UN Human Rights Commission in formulating 30 articles, and they were accepted as a resolution rather than a binding covenant. However, they had a lot of impact in forming certain bodies of international law and national law. Here is the wording of a few of the articles of the Declaration, and they can move a soul to tears. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience, and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration, without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. All are equal before the law and are entitled without any discrimination to equal protection of the law. Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change one's religion or belief, and also freedom to teach, practice, worship, and observe. So it's very interesting to ask, what kind of a world would we have if these kinds of universal rights were binding and part of international law? If we ask, how does the Universal Declaration of Human Rights square with UU principles, Unitarian Universalist principles, and with the Baha'i understanding of consultation? I would say it fits very, very well. You know, as I revisited the UU principles, I see that they're permeated, you know, with a sense of justice. It is a powerful, palpable reality that's throughout all the principles. They also deal with consultation, or require consultation, I believe. Inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance and encouragement to spiritual growth throughout the lifespan, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. That is done best, I think, with consultation. Right of conscience and use of democratic process. Again, consultation required. World community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. That's global consultation. Respect for the interdependent web of existence. This would be consultation with the elements and with all forms of life. I also loved some of those lines, especially from Lincoln, that we shared earlier. Our reliance is in our love for liberty, and then he qualified it, liberty, the heritage of all people in all lands everywhere. Why should there not be a patient confidence, Lincoln asked, in the ultimate justice of the people? Let us have faith that right makes might, or that justice will eventually prevail. So justice requires moral and spiritual development. It also fosters it. And it requires more than rational choice, I believe. Something has to be added to will and rationality, and that would be a spiritual grounding of some kind to bring about personal change and social change. A few more final quotes. Justice is not limited. It is a universal quality. Its operation must be carried out in all classes, from their highest to the lowest. Justice must be sacred, and the rights of all people must be considered. All prejudices, whether of religion, race, politics, or nation, must be renounced, for these prejudices have caused the world's sickness. Justice and impartiality mean considering the welfare of the community as one's own, regarding humanity as a single individual and one's own self as a member of that great body. Baha'u'llah, the prophet of the Baha'i faith, said that someday all leaders everywhere are going to come together and consult on the state of the world, and that they're going to engage their peoples in a very elaborate consultation process and work toward a firm body of international law and develop international institutions that can implement and enforce that law. In brief, humanity is going to come up with, in the future, a world government of some kind, one that will be effective, flexible, respectful of regional diversity, ethnocultural diversity, religious diversity, open to ongoing consultation. Someday a just world government will be established, I believe. It will outlaw war and settle all disputes by fair arbitration and the enforcement of international law. Someday, after humanity has matured morally and spiritually, getting better at this art of consultation and applying it in ever wider circles, we will have justice, peace, and prosperity. And then, as Judy Chicago envisioned, all that has divided us will merge, compassion will be wedded to power, softness will come to a world that is harsh and unkind. The greed of some will give way to the needs of many. All will care for the sick, the weak, and the old. All will nourish the young, and all will cherish life's creatures. This will be the age of humanity's maturity, with peace, justice, and prosperity for all. Thank you.